inside sales should be that glue that kind of gets them all talking and,
Right.
holding them together. The reality is any you could have any sales tool, but you have to make sure the hygiene is clean. You have to make sure that the sellers are tracking and doing a little bit of their tracking of their activity, a work on their end to make these tools the most efficient they can be.
Can you double click on what you mean by any reply can be a good reply?
Yeah, I think anyone who has done sales, understands you get a lot more no's before you get a yes. Circles back to reaching out with a purpose, a why, right? And doing your homework a little bit. So,
In this episode, I interview Brooke Lifler, who is a seasoned inside sales leader. We delve into the intricacies of inside sales, highlighting its potential for success when executed strategically. We emphasize the importance of finding the right balance in investment, technology, and operational support to scale up effectively. We talk through insights around building strong partnerships between inside and outside sales teams. We explore methods to manage change, align goals, and foster a culture of continuous improvement. From overcoming objections to nurturing talent, we discuss the qualities that set apart good sellers from great ones, offering valuable advice for both aspiring and seasoned sales professionals. Okay, Brooke, in our pre-call planning, you had said something to me that I thought was really impactful. You had mentioned that inside sales is low risk, high reward when done correctly. And I want to put a big, quotations and bold and underline, italicize around the if done correctly. So what do you see in your experience, and what do you hear in your talkings with other people in your peer group about the challenges that they face with building out and scaling up an inside sales organization?
Yeah. Inside sales is successful and proven to be successful when it's efficient, scalable, and, cost effective.
Right.
And what I see sometimes is maybe orgs or companies will either not lean in enough to inside sales or lean in too much for inside sales. And you need to find that sweet spot, right? Where it makes sense the size of the company, the revenue, the sales targets, and then just that buy-in, that perfect partnership between marketing and outside sales, because inside sales should be that glue that kind of gets them all talking and,
Right.
holding them together.
Yeah. I always use the harness analogy when I think about inside sales or sales development, is you're literally kind of latching on to a traditional sales process where you have marketing and sales, and then you
Yep.
have your inside or your SDR team kind of latched on as a harness, keeping them snug and aligned, which is probably the key word. But two things you said that really stood out right there. Number one, partnership. So I think that is in a lot of ways what defines inside sales, because you really don't have an inside sales program without partnership selling models, right? So it's in conjunction with your outside sales team, it's in conjunction with your account executives and these sorts of things. So I love the partnership point. But when you said about the too little, I want to dig into that if we could, because what I see when I think of too little investment into our inside sales organization is around the operational side of things, where
Yep.
the team doesn't get the TLC that maybe they need around the tech stack and its friction
Yes.
potentially, or maybe just reporting and intelligence. So tell me, is that what you mean by too little? What other things do you see as, where we're not putting enough investment into inside sales?
Yeah, there are so many tools and technology
Mm.
that today that should make anybody's job just more targeted. I don't want to say easier because it's not making it easier. It's just giving us more of a purpose of like, who should we target and why? And there are so many tools that are telling our sales teams, this is who we should be targeting and this is the why. So having a purpose to reach out to anyone makes it a little bit more warm and not as cold. And, also finding those team links or those connections where again we can make those outreach more warm. So you have to invest in an inside sales team and give them, tools and technology that will help them do their job more strategically.
Yeah, it's while on one hand it can be cost effective because we think about low cost, high reward, but there is a cost. It's not that you want to strip it down. If anything, you probably want to bolt on additional technology that you probably wouldn't have with your full cycle sellers. I think about Chili Piper and scheduling tools and things of that sort. But yeah, the reason I focus on the tech and the ops side of things is because if you don't have a team that's dedicated operationally to supporting that inside sales team, that SDR team, and you have one sales operations team or person that's kind of focused on both of those groups, then what ends up happening is that sales operations person or small group tends to lend itself towards the account executives, the outside sales representatives, the late stage requirements of transacting business. And so you may not get the strategy and data analysis and tool optimization that you need at the top of the funnel or with smaller deal sizes, for instance. So I know that that's definitely one of the big challenges that we probably face, but what do you think about the change management aspect of it when rolling out and scaling these teams up? You're hiring a bunch of people, you're bringing all these new tech, you're adding all this process, if you will. How do you go about managing the change in that respect?
I mean, there has to be processes that are done by everybody, and our everybody in the company is bought into those processes. I think we've moved so far from casting a wide net, right? And blasting emails, you know, sometimes timing is the right time to reach out, but typically it's you've got to have a little bit more knowledge around the why and the purpose of who you're targeting. And so, you know, that change management plays a piece of just understanding the process and make sure that everybody is using the same tools, technology, and process and tracking it as they go. So we know what each and every team member is doing, outside sales, sales, and marketing. And we're all in sync, right? Doing similar prospecting and similar outreach.
Now, the keeping an eye on that, orchestrating that's not easy, right? Making sure that
No.
everybody's, consistent and aligned and using the same unified tool stack and, messaging, which is challenging in itself. But so what do you use? How do you go about doing that? Like, how do you keep that fastened strongly together?
I mean, first and foremost, I think that any company should be using a lead management tool, right? Where you're scoring and qualifying leads, you know, you're not just bringing in a bunch of garbage, right? And so lead management, I think, is very, very important for marketing and sales. And then qualifying that. And I think that that is how you qualify this is different for any company. And you know, whether you're selling a product or services, you have to be able to bring those quality leads to outside sales and make sure that we're not wasting outside sales time, right, with a bunch of garbage as well. So you don't want to waste the inside sales team and you don't want to waste the outside sales team. Like, time is money. So that is, there are so many tools in place that can make sure ensure that you're spending time on quality leads that turn into qualified opportunities and contacts.
What's your CRM of preference? If you had to choose any CRM, you're building out a team, which one are you going to use?
I would say Salesforce, and I'm curious,
Okay.
is that, you know, is that what you typically find? Are there, what
Yeah.
others are you hearing?
Yeah, no, I mean, for me, my favorite definitely is Salesforce. I got a couple
Yeah.
certs there and work on it quite a bit, but HubSpot definitely is up there. I interviewed a guest recently. He runs a sales training organization. You might have heard of him, John Burroughs. But he just switched from Salesforce to HubSpot for his business. And he's a big Salesforce trainer. He for many years he helped for, I think it was like 10 years as an outside sales trainer. But anyways, HubSpot definitely number two. I think that after that it's just a litany of different names that come to mind. But yeah, if I'm building on a team, I'm going with Salesforce myself because I'm more familiar with it. But the reality is HubSpot that I've seen works really well. Half of my clients use HubSpot.
The reality is any you could have any sales tool, but you have to make sure the hygiene is clean. You have to make sure that we're, you know, sellers are tracking and doing a little bit of their, you know, tracking of their activity, a work on their end to make these tools the most efficient they can be.
Well, that's a hot topic because your inside salesperson is accustomed to digital tools and channels. That's their mode of operation and engaging
Right.
with customers and prospects. Whereas your outside salesperson, the modality that you want them in is in-person communication, right? And so trying to get your inside sellers compliant with CRM hygiene, not that it's easy, but it's, I think, easier compared to our outside sales brethren. So it actually brings me to an important question that I wanted to ask you here was, how do we prevent our inside sellers and our SDRs from becoming the secretaries for our outside sellers?
That's such a hard question because you're absolutely right. In a lot of ways, like we want to build that relationship and that trust. And it is so easy to, you know, input stuff into a database that we're in all day and every day.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, any inside sales team should have very, you know, strict metrics that they need to meet. And at the end of the day, that's not getting them to their goals. That's not contributing to their activity, right? Like they need to uncover target buyers. They need to track their own meeting goals and their own meeting
they
opportunities.
They got calls to make, they got emails to send, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and so I want to emphasize that they shouldn't be spending their time on that as well, because that's not getting them to their goals. And it, at the end of the day, it's not helping make sales and find new deals.
So what is the solution for our listeners when you think about these areas that, you know, that are happening and, you know, you don't want and you don't think that we should be doing? So what should we be doing as an alternative? Like when we think about just maintaining good quality data, because all of our decisions are going to be made on the heels of the data that we collect and maintain. And that's at the core of driving the business forward. So
I like when SDRs or inside sales teams have free rein, right? Like when they can operate how they want with maybe inactive contacts or, you know, the net new stuff that's coming in. And I think that that entices outside sellers to really make sure that they're tracking their own relationships, right? Because if someone is meeting happy hours, lunches, dinners, and they're not tracking that, then someone else can start owning that relationship. And that
technically,
would
yeah, technically, bad. But then, I mean, come on now, we know and the also refereeing would make happens.
Right. And it would look awkward if someone has such a strong relationship at a company and then someone else is doing a cold outreach, right? So that should incentivize any outside seller to start tracking their activity. Whereas it's viewed sometimes where if there's an inactive contact or there's no activity, then it should be free reign. Anyone should be able to start, you know, prospecting that contact or that lead.
Yeah, agreed. And I wish that we could trust the data 100%, and we should be able to.
Right.
In this day and age, it's so easy to have an integration with your Outlook or your Gmail, whatever email client you're using, back to your CRM. So we're not missing that. We should be able to track that back pretty seamlessly. I think where we fall down a little bit is in the conversations and the meetings, where if we're doing in-person meetings, it's not like we're going to have Gong running at the same time, unless you're low key, put your phone there and record it or something. But you know, when you're having virtual meetings, again, it's kind of hard to miss that these days because those integrations all exist where it can track all that data back into the CRM. But again, if we haven't built the integrations, if we haven't acquired the tools, and or we're just ripping and running trying to sell accounts and we're not really thinking about that too much, then that crossing of wires you talk about happens a ton. And what I see often happen is that the AEs will tell, or the, you know, field reps will say, just don't touch this account. They'll just, you know, hoard accounts to prevent that. And then marketing can't nurture them. SDRs and inside sales folks can't expand reach in the account. We're just talking enterprise here. It's going to be hard for one AE to kind of cover the whole breadth of that account in some cases. So
yeah,
I think that's, these are challenges that you run into with inside sales and outside sales partnering together, but that's what makes, you know, the leadership side of it so important, right? Is kind of managing all that.
And the partnership so important, right? And the trust and the relationship building, so you know exactly where maybe it's different departments, right? Maybe it's different personas or roles that you're targeting versus what the field reps are targeting.
Exactly. The divide and conquer, for sure. Yeah. So let's flip that on its head a little bit, because that's the challenges of keeping the team aligned and the communication. And but a lot of times the teaming can work. And I'm curious, what have you seen, or what is a if you're talking to another inside sales leader, first time in the role, and you want to give them some advice on how to go about getting their inside sales sellers and their outside sellers better aligned and getting that teaming, that dynamic, that synergy smoothed out. I mean, what should you tell another leader to do to make sure that they are built, their teams, their reps are building strong partnerships?
I mean, first and foremost would just to build a roadmap or a plan of how you're going to cover, whether it's industry based, you know, regional, like regionally aligned, how you're going to cover what and who's going to cover what, and then build out goals that are maintainable, but, you know, hard. You want to make sure that they're, I like to use 75% of your team is hitting your goals, you know, and I know that that is different in any sales org, but it's a lot of, in the beginning, kind of test and trying what works, what doesn't. And you have to, it's not for an inside seller, it's not just like the sale at the end of the day, because, you know, you don't own the relationship. You're not doing the negotiation. You're doing a lot of the activity-based metrics. And so you have to look of who are you identifying and what is that plan? Are you targeting personas? Are you targeting industries? Are you targeting accounts? And then within those buckets, right, what is the activity goals within of those? Is it meeting goals, calls, getting people on the phone, email campaigns, nurture campaigns, and a lot of activity building?
Do you facilitate like weekly one-on-ones, or do you have them meet as a team, like as a pod, on any sort of cadence?
Both.
Both.
And then as well as whoever they're supporting outside sales wise and marketing wise, like those need to be weekly cadences as well, right? And that's where the strategic planning. Yeah, most of them. That's where like the strategic planning of where your time will be allocated is happening. So I definitely want to be included, but it depends how large and how many people you're supporting. You can't do it all, you know?
Exactly. I've heard of and seen SDRs that are supporting 7 account executives. And a lot of times it's because, you know, they're shorthanded on the SDR side of things. And so until somebody backfills or an inside salesperson in your case. So it's temporary usually, but still there's no way to properly affect change within 7, 10 people, and then trying to meet with all of them. Keeping that pod tight, 2-to-1, 3-to-1
the
ratio. Yeah.
The closer you can have that alignment, you know, the more targeted you can and strategic you can become of who you're reaching out to, you know, as long as it's a partnership on both sides and the less is more in that case, then yeah, you can do a lot more within those accounts.
So another thing you said in our planning was that I thought was interesting was that any reply can be a good reply. And I think that in some ways goes without saying, but I thought it was interesting because the spin you put on it was that it's a mindset. Can you double click on what you mean by any reply can be a good reply?
Yeah, I think anyone who has done sales, you know, understands you get a lot more no's before you get a yes, or a lot more no's before first yeses. But any reply, even if it's a negative, gives you a chance to engage with that prospect or that customer, potential customer. And you have their attention, right? And so often calls go unanswered, emails go unread. When they're replying to you, you know that you have their attention somehow, and you can really take that as an opportunity to craft a response, overcoming the objection that they are maybe mentioning, right? We get a lot of, you know, I'm not the correct person for this. This isn't in my world. This isn't in my wheelhouse. Well, that's where you can actually take it and say, this is in your wheelhouse and this is why, and maybe provide a customer story or a client story very similar to that role or that persona to show them why, and in fact does, you know, involve them.
Right.
And turn those no's into
point.
Yeses.
Exactly. I mean, you want like every no gets you closer to a yes is also one way to look at it. But I don't think enough emphasis is put on exactly what you just said, where that moment of impact, when you have someone who picks up the phone and says, sorry, I'm not the right person, or replies back, no, not interested. These are opportunities, right?
Yeah.
These are prime opportunities. And this is where the real skill of being a salesperson gets flexed is, can you turn that no into a yes? Can you be persuasive and convincing? Can you probe effectively? Can you do all the important salesmanship and sales skills that it takes to really move the needle? Because at the end of the day, anybody can send a crafted email and then get a reply that says, yes, I'm interested, I'll buy now. But that's not necessarily the selling. That's more order taking than it is selling. So I love that you mentioned that point. But I'm curious, what would you recommend if I was starting in a position? Like, what do you do? What should someone else do to prepare their team for those objections? Because it's one thing to document them, right, and put them in a playbook and say, hey, if you hear not interested, here's what you should say. But how do you get that to be a solid and clear frame of reference for them, so that when they finally get someone, because it doesn't happen every hour necessarily, even let alone every day, how do they keep it fresh? How do you get them ready for that? What development practices, learning paths do you have that you like to see or recommend?
Training, for sure. But also, it's just that right there, that is your first chance at building a relationship with that potential customer that you've reached out to. And so just having that mindset, when, you know, someone says no, we turn, and we have data that proves this, right? We can turn no's into yeses. Any reply is a good reply. And to get excited about that, I think it's a mindset, right? And that's just more of doing it, turning your first no into a yes. And then you can understand, oh yeah, this is a great reply, even though it didn't start that way.
To me, those are the best calls, literally.
Absolutely.
The best calls, the
Absolutely.
Best email threads are that's, and I don't mean just as from a management perspective or from an advisor standpoint, but if I'm that person, if I'm that rep, that nothing feels better than that. Right. And I think there's even a point of that where the buyer can enjoy that experience too. You know, when you go in with a high level of resistance, I'm not interested in buying anything right now, but you have such a great experience with the individual that's you're working with, your representative, whether it's in a retail setting or a B2B setting. And then you switch and actually walk out with something or walk away with taking a meeting or what have you. That can be a positive for them too. So it could be a win-win.
And that circles back to reaching out with a purpose, a why, right? And doing your homework a little bit. So, you know, if you have that top of mind, then you can definitely bring in something, a client story, a customer story, that is the purpose of why you were reaching out to that specific persona.
But the getting ready for that, I think what I've talked about repeatedly on this show is practice, 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 with a number of guests trying to driving that home, that it's not enough for us to provide the rebuttal to our reps. We have to role play this stuff. We have to practice this stuff, right? If we're going to have a call blitz, you know, today at 10 a.m., then at 9 a.m., we're meeting as a group and we're practicing some of these objections and blow-offs that we're anticipating, right?
And sharing,
right. You know, and if you're calling to a certain industry, you're calling to a certain persona, then we should be able to anticipate what some of that might look like. Now, you can't anticipate everything, but it's making it so that the game slows down for the rep, right? Because it's not the first time they've seen this pitch. They use a sports analogy, right? That's the point that I'd want to get them to, is with their confidence. When they do hear that objection, I'm using XYZ competitor, I'm so glad you said that. You know, like you almost get excited to hear the objection because you know you can turn this thing around and counter that point. So, and the thing
and
is, customers like to learn. Prospects like to learn. Like they want to learn something new. And that's part of the problem why cold outreach sucks a lot of times, because you're not teaching people anything. You're just calling, trying to twist their arm. But if you can, in a rebuttal, teach them something new and change their frame of reference, then yeah, again, it goes back to a positive buyer experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. And consulting is unique, and it's not just a product. You're not selling, you know, a specific product that is the same pitch over and over again. Consulting is unique where it's so many different services that, you know, different firms offer, and you don't want to pigeonhole yourself into one or the other when you're offering so many different services and expertise.
Yeah, I love when they tell me, you know what, we're good. We don't need help with our sales development team right now. And I can just fall back and say, well, how about that Salesforce instance? You know, how about that sales loft setup? And just, you know, having that back pocket option. But yeah, 100%. What do you think separates a good, just top of mind, first thing that comes to mind? You have a good seller and a great seller. What? What's the difference between good and great in terms of individual selling abilities?
I think this goes for probably many different roles and jobs, but there are things that are just not coachable in specifically sellers, right? And it's like that eagerness, that drive, that motivation. You can't coach that. Right. You know, there are tools and technologies, processes, trainings that you can coach that, even someone very junior, someone very green. But if they have that eagerness and that drive, money hungry, I think that's always such a good quality in a salesperson. Those are things that are just not coachable, and you can weed those out pretty quickly whether someone has that or not. And I think that that sets apart a great and a good seller right off the bat.
So their purpose, not just reaching out with a purpose, but the individual why and my purpose, being clear about that and having some intrinsic motivation, which compels me to do whatever I need to do to be successful in that endeavor, that being able to package that is what you think is makes a great seller versus a good seller.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's inside sales, SDRs, that world. That's why it is such a great stepping stone. You get visibility into so many different areas of the business too. Mm. And those who are eager and hungry, you know, they use that as a stepping stone to really grow their career in many different directions, not just an outside seller.
Yeah. One of the things that you'd mentioned is seeing a lot of inside sales, SDR, you know, folks moving on and being promoted on in this model of, right, you build out and you scale up an inside sales organization. By sure virtue of that, one of the big benefits is that you have this bench of talent, theoretically. And I know it gets debated a lot in the space. You hear people saying that that model actually doesn't work because SDRs only stay for 1.8, 1.4 months. And so do they really move on? And it may not be like the total overwhelming number of reps moves on, but definitely I have seen myself, and you have as well, people go from the inside to field sales or inside SDR to account executive closer role. That progression does happen, does work. But what's the common trait when you see for the people that you've seen that have moved on from, you know, starting their career at inside sales to going to outside sales and account executive closing, what's the common, you know, trait of that individual, those individuals, would you say?
Circling full circle moment of what I was just, you know, talking about. Mm. It's that eagerness, that, you know, that drive and that motivation. And I've seen it happen so flawlessly, you know. Sales is an investment in any company, and it takes time to really get your feet on the ground and start to make, you know, an imprint of like proving yourself. And so when you already know that these people are doing those things, it's a very easy, seamless transition from someone going to inside sales to outside sales. There's no ramp up period. There's no time investment. It's just an immediate impact that they're making.
Yeah. Have you seen people make that transition and then flunk out?
You know, not personally, but I know it's happened. Absolutely. I haven't experienced that personally, but yeah, that's definitely a possibility.
Yeah. I don't see it a ton, but, it happens in my experience with those that are, trying to fast track the process.
Yeah.
You know, I had two good quarters as an SDR. Now I'm ready to be an AE. And I've never forecasted, I've never dealt with a revenue target, I've never owned accounts per se. And so sometimes I think we can fast track that too quickly. And I think those are the folks that, you know, have a hard time. But again, it comes back to management as well. Management, training, the support, the operational support that's around the team. And how are we setting people up for success? So,
yeah. And I think shadowing the full cycle sales process is really important for anybody and everybody.
I love the mentor programs. I love it when we have these intermediate programs where you're still an SDR, you still have that number, but we're carving out time and resources to get you exposure and to ride, you know, a second seat on some of these deals all the way through. And quite honestly, even if that doesn't exist, if we're not facilitating it, going back to that drive and that ambition that you were talking about, that intrinsic motivation, a lot of times I think inside sales and SDRs will figure it out and say, you know what, let me go and look at the opportunities that are in the CRM. Let me reverse engineer how these deals were won. And they'll, and not only that, but then they'll be curious, right? Going back to that trait of reaching out to account executives and trying to, you know, pick their brain and understand what it takes to be successful and how they can, you know, follow their lead, if you will. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Sales Consultant Podcast. If you'd like to support the show, it would go a long way if you were to write a short review on the listening app of your choice.